everyone, welcome back to the Fantasy Bros Baseball Podcast for one of my favorite episodes of the season, Bold Predictions. I'm Bobby Sylvester, and today I'm joined by award-winning number fire writer, Jim Sanis. You'll want to follow Jim on Twitter if you don't already, and you can find him at his name, Jim Sanis. That's S-A-N-N-E-S. Jim, thanks for coming back on the show.
Thank you, Bobby. I appreciate it. How are you doing today?
I am doing good. It has been a grind the last 2 weeks, just pounding out all of these articles and stuff to get people ready for draft prep. Did a Reddit AMA today, and I'm not going to complain, though. I have the best job in the world. It's a blast.
Absolutely. I mean, like, it is definitely a bit of a time crunch to get ready for opening day, especially with it being, you know, essentially a week earlier this year. So that part makes it hard, but hey, we get baseball sooner. We get to watch games during the day pretty soon, a week from yesterday, you know, or a week from today. I can get on board with that for sure.
It is a great time of the year. I don't remember who I was talking to, but earlier this month I was saying March is number one in my months for, you know, sports power rankings. And March is the best, man. We get all this fantasy baseball stuff. Baseball's about to start. March Madness, NBA playoffs are coming up, all the NFL offseason stuff. It is a tremendous month.
Oh, and it includes NASCAR, Bobby. We cannot forget that NASCAR is going on.
Sorry, everyone.
March. Yeah, so, you know, there may not be any NFL, but there's so much there to compensate for. And the NFL offseason is fun, too. So, yeah, especially this year with the NFL trades and a free agency in baseball kind of being located in March and February, it's definitely made this month pretty busy.
So, Jim, I'm excited about today's show. We've got three fun listener mailbag questions. Then we're each going to count down five bold predictions for the year. Before we get into that, I wanted to tell you about a special contest we've got going on thanks to our friends at FanDuel.com. We've teamed up with FanDuel to provide a limited time offer where you can win cash and a lifetime subscription to Fantasy Pros. FanDuel offers daily fantasy sports games for all the major sports, including the upcoming baseball season, NFL, NBA, NHL, and golf. Every day, there's hundreds of contests from big cash tournaments to 50-50s. I like to play in the satellite contest where, like, you have like a 1 in 60 chance to get into one of these huge contests, and they're super cheap. Those ones are a lot of fun for me because when you get into those big contests, it just like takes sports to a whole new level. I'm really excited about the opening day slate, though, because there's nothing like opening day DFS and that excitement of building your team and seeing the prices for everyone. I'm already doing my research and everything like that. And they have an opening day special contest going on for you guys. Just go to fantasypros.com/contest and you'll have your shot at a $5,000 prize pool. It's just $3 to enter. And again, first place also takes home a lifetime Fantasy Pro subscription and a $1,000 cash prize. Space is limited to enter, so make sure to get in the contest today. All right. All ready, Jim?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's get to it.
Sounds good, man. All right. First question from Adam in Kansas. And if you want to send in listener mailbag questions, it's mailbag@fantasypros.com. Try to get to as many of them as we can. But, you know, some of them are better fit for the show. I'll respond to as many as I can, though. Adam from Kansas wants to know, he says, I haven't heard anything mentioned about Dan Vogelbach all preseason, yet he's been amazing in spring training throughout the minors. Am I missing something, or is he going to break out and be like a surprise Matt Carpenter type of player?
Yeah, I think that I was actually not in on Vogelbach until 2 days ago, actually. So it's good timing to ask the question. There was an article in the Seattle Times about how Vogelbach is trying to gear his swing for more power. And that's kind of been my annoyance with Vogelbach. If you look back to last year, his fly ball rate in AAA was 36.1%. Yes, he draws a lot of walks, and he doesn't strike out a ton. But he only had a 166 isolated slugging percentage. So if you're going to get that out of your first base slash DH guy, there's not a ton of upside. Then you add in the presence of Nelson Cruz, the outfielders the Mariners have, and then Ryan Healy in his trade. And he's been playing this week too, so the health may be trending up there. I didn't really see a spot for Vogelbach to play. But like they said, he's been crushing in spring training, and there is a narrative to support it with him changing the way that he is swinging. So I'm buying in. I think that he's worth a late flyer, but at the same time, you need to know that there are risks associated with Vogelbach still because of playing time. But I mean, if he keeps performing, they're going to have a really hard time keeping him out of the lineup.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm glad you wrote in with this question because I think it's a good one. I wasn't drafting Vogelbach anywhere. He was on my radar because he's been someone, like you said, who's torn up the minor leagues all along. And he's kind of a weird profile, right? He wasn't a big prospect because he's 6 foot, 250 pounds. And that was actually bigger before this year. But he's always hit really well. He's the type of guy that comes into the major leagues. He's just going to hit. kind of like a CJ Krohn, maybe a little bit better. I think he's more of a better real life player than he is a fantasy player because he's going to help an on base percentage and everything like that. But he's got the pop to hit 20, 25 home runs. You know, I think that he's going to have a solid batting average, 265, 270, maybe 280. And that's a player that you can get at the end of drafts. I just wasn't getting him because I was drafting Ryan McMahon. And yes, I know I was mispronouncing his name last show. I got an email about that. And also my producer let me know a couple times just to make sure I corrected it. So sorry about that. I tend to go to Baseball Reference if I don't know a name and they don't have a pronunciation for McMahon. So I was just winging it. And the guy that came on our show last week, I thought, oh, wait, he's getting this wrong. What's he doing, man? And it turns out it was me. So that's kind of embarrassing.
I've been there. I had to look up a Sesame Street video to figure out how to say Dylan G's name right. So we've all been there, I think.
That's terrific. All right, now the next question here comes to us from Aaron in Pennsylvania. And he wants to know what player we found ourselves drafting a lot that we're not exactly targeting.
Yeah, I think for me, it's Yoenis Cespedes. This has actually happened before with Yoenis Cespedes, being a guy that I don't like seek out but just wind up falling into quite often, because I kind of, you know, look at Yoenis Cespedes, he's a known asset. I kind of thought, okay, people like Yoenis Cespedes, he plays in a big market, he's probably going to be a bit too expensive for me. But his ADP right now is 82.8, his consensus ADP, that's just too cheap for me. If we look back to last year, and obviously there was a lot of health concerns, but when he played, the skills were still intact. He didn't strike out a ton, he got on base, he hit a lot of home runs, and he had a really good batted ball profile. And I know that the lineup around him is not great with the pieces that they have lost, with Michael Conforto being kind of a question mark heading into the year, but it's not Marlins level awful. And I think that's kind of where it would need to be for Cespedes to be justified at that price. So I've found that I'm ending up with a lot more Yoenis Cespedes than I thought I would wind up having, but I'm okay with it. I mean, I like the profile, so I'm not going to complain that I wind up having him, you know, decently often.
There's like 300 players that we've talked about on this podcast this offseason, probably. I mean, that's about how many fantasy relevant players there are in standard leagues. What are the chances we would land on the same exact name here, Jim?
Oh, is it? Or did we really?
Yes. Yeah, we did. Cespedes is the guy that I've ended up with the most. And, you know, I've got another name, too. They're both in the same range. It's Robinson Cano. I mean, I have so many of shares of them, and I bet most other experts do as well, because, you know, they're both kind of boring. Like you said, yes, they're known assets. You want to draft the sexier players. Most people do. But, you know, that range of the draft is ugly for value. Mm-hmm. And they just end up being the top player on my board right around pick 65, 70. I mean, his ECR is quite a bit higher than his ADP, which means the experts in the industry like him a lot more than the general public, both of these guys. And so as a result, I've been ending up with him, and, you know, it doesn't look great. It doesn't really feel great, but he's the top player on my board, so I take him.
Yeah, it's kind of, I've been there with Nelson Cruz, a little bit more expensive, but a similar thought process where this part of the draft makes me want to vomit, but I know I get some safety, decent amount of upside from Nelson Cruz. I know that there is risk there, but there's risk with everyone at that portion of the draft. Yep. Same thing with where Cespedes is going. So if I can get a little bit of safety while maybe taking a more boring player, so be it. I can live with that for sure.
Cruz is another guy for me too. And I really don't think that there's that much risk with him, at least compared to other people around him. Like, I love Tommy Pham. I want to reach for Tommy Pham to make sure I get him. So I always have to tell myself, like, when it's between Cruz and Tommy Pham, and it has been a couple drafts that I've done, you know, Pham might be their next round. And even if he's not, Nelson Cruz is the better asset. I want Tommy Pham on my team because yes, I think that I'm right about him. You know, I want to be right about somebody that a lot of people aren't on. But the thing is, Nelson Cruz is going to help my team win a championship. That's what it's about.
Yep, I agree. I would take Cruz over Pham, and I like Pham too. Like, Pham is a guy I've drafted plenty. But if I'm choosing between those two, I would go Cruz as well.
It seems like every expert I've had on the podcast loves Tommy Pham, yet his ADP is still like 60.
I get it. I think I understand it. Like, in looking into him more with his eye issue, it has given me some pause. His spring numbers are really bad from a strikeout rate perspective, and that's kind of soured me on him a bit. But I also kind of wonder, hey, you know, the sun down there, we know his eye issues. He doesn't play as well during day games, playing a lot of day games. I don't know how much to weigh that. It's definitely at least in my mind. And I think it makes me feel better about going Nelson Cruz there. Even if he doesn't have the same, you know, obviously the same stolen base upside that Pham has, I feel better about not reaching as much for Pham.
What about Encarnacion or Pham? Who would you take between the two?
I'd probably go Pham there because me I don't too. View Edwin Encarnacion as being as safe as people tend to view him, I guess. If we remember back to last year, he was useless the first month and a half. And at that point, are you willing to like hold on to him through all that? Are you willing to take those lumps? We know that there is a floor for Edwin Encarnacion, but I don't feel like that floor is being baked into his price.
You know, he was basically the same asset as Jose Bautista last year, right? Maybe a little better than Bautista, and they both started out really horrible. One of them doesn't even have a job in the major leagues right now. He's going undrafted, and the other one's Encarnacion. I could see that happening to him this year. I'm not, you know, putting anything bad on him, but he's at that point in his career where it could just happen, and Cruz has shown no signs of slowing down, so I trust him.
Absolutely. I would do the same for sure.
All right, last listener mailbag question here. Sam from Texas, he wants to know if we're going to do a prediction show. That's this show. And he wants to know if we can tell him who our playoff and World Series picks are. So I'll let you go here first on this one, Jim.
Okay, so if we're picking World Series, I'm going to go with Washington over Cleveland. I'll pick the Nationals to win it all. I feel like it's too boring to go with the Dodgers or Astros, so I'm going to avoid them. And I'm going to go Nationals and Cleveland. And the reason I'm picking the Nationals to win it is that they've got this stacked rotation that is built to win playoff games with Max Scherzer and Steven Strasburg. And although we didn't see it last year, their bullpen is really good now. With Sean Doolittle and Ryan Madsen, they have the bullpen that you need to win playoff games. They've got that offense, Adam Eaton, hopefully back, Daniel Murphy, hopefully back at some point too. Like if they are healthy, they have so much in every single department where you want to be good. I know they've been my pick for like each of the last 15 years, it feels like by this point, but at some point I've got to accidentally be right. So I'm going to go Nationals again. And it's hard for me to pick against Cleveland with their rotation, with their bullpen, with their offense. I think that they would be my picks right now.
I love the Dodgers. How can you not? I love the Cubs. How can you not? I mean, those two are easy picks to win the division, and the Nationals are too. But my pick, obviously, not obviously, but I was agreeing with you. My pick is the Nationals. Okay. And a lot of the same reasons you mentioned. It does depend on health. Scherzer, Strasburg have to stay healthy. They've had, Scherzer hasn't had health problems. Strasburg has, and Scherzer's arm could fall off any minute with the way that he throws. I'm just not really so sure it's going to last. But, you know, he's a freak of nature. It's happened so far. Murphy has to come back. Eaton is back. He has to stay healthy. Rendon's had injury issues. Harper's had injury issues. If they can stay healthy, they're the best team in all of baseball. I really believe that. I'm not picking them to win the World Series, though. My pick is the New York Yankees. I mean, they have the greatest bullpen ever assembled. That's not hyperbole. You look at what they have there. I mean, they've got four of the top seven, eight relievers in baseball. They've got other guys coming up. Domingo German is coming up. He's going to be an absolute monster someday. I mean, he could be, if he was for any other team, I would say he might steal the job midseason. He's that good. He's going to be like their sixth relief pitcher, Jim.
Yeah. If Tommy Kahnle is your third or fourth best reliever, you're probably doing something right. So I think that's, they're going to be tough to beat for sure.
Chapman, Betances, they've got David Robertson, Tommy Kahnle, like you said, Chad Green, who might be better than all of them. And then German, like I mentioned, they've got other guys too. It is a nasty bullpen. Plus, I mean, I haven't even mentioned, they might just hit 280 homers. I'm not kidding at all. They had Stanton. They get Greg Bird back, who's a total masher.
They get a steal with Neil Walker. Yeah.
Yeah. Walker's an upgrade. Drury's an upgrade. It's going to be lit. Is that what the kids say? Is that how you say it, Jim?
I've heard it once or twice. Yes.
Actually, I think that's what Mike Tagliere says on the football podcast, but, you know, he's kind
it's
of
a good
kid.
Way to describe
he's like
Yankees.
My little brother.
Yeah, exactly. It's a good way to describe them, though, because, like, they have so much. I think the concern that I have is with the rotation, but I think that might be overblown because the bullpen may just nullify that concern altogether.
Yeah, I mean, you have Severino. He's a legitimate ace. After that, it's not pretty, but you know, if you're turning it over to the bullpen in the fourth inning, and you can in the playoffs with that bullpen, you could do it in a second. You could pitch just the bullpen. They're so good. And I don't know if they could be beat. Their bullpen is so good.
Yeah, it's disgusting. So they'd probably be my number two pick for the American League. I have a hard time not picking Cleveland with all that they have to offer.
Which is amazing too, right? Because I agree. I think Indians is my number two team, and the Astros, they're coming off the World Series win. Right. They're so young that they're getting even better. They've got all
their
this
rotation
depth
better
everywhere.
With Gerrit Cole.
Yes, yeah. The Astros are an amazing team. They're projected to win like 100 games with some of these
and they should be.
Projection models. Yeah. There's six super teams. They're the ones that can win the World Series. I can't see anyone else doing it. My wild cards, Boston Red Sox, Los Angeles Angels. I think those two teams are a full tier or two above anyone else, any other competitor in the American League. Like, would you? Who else would you consider there? Maybe the Twins, Blue Jays?
I can't go Twins. I grew up a Twins fan, so I like the Twins from a fan perspective. But I don't think with their rotation, despite the gains of Odorizzi and Lynn, I don't think I can put them within the same range as Cleveland. So, like, they're fine. And I think that Boston, you mentioned Boston, they would probably be the top team I've mentioned there. If I were picking, like, a dark horse team besides the Angels, because I really do love their offense, I kind of do like the Mariners still. I don't know why I always gravitate towards them, given their rotation. It's not a great rotation. They've got some injuries piling up, too. But the offense is so good and so fun that I kind of want them to do well. I just can't respect myself and pick them to do well.
Their offense isn't on the same level as the Yankees, and you don't really know how good their offense is because they play in that ballpark, which suppresses power and everything like that. This is one of the best offenses in baseball.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And they're old, but they still get it done. Like, we haven't seen a fall off from them yet. So, and you add in D. Gordon, they're going to be great. Speedy Gene Segura for a full year, too, should help. Yeah. I like a lot of what they have. I just can't pick them with their pitching issues.
Yep, I agree. They're behind the Angels as my number three team that's not going to win a division. What about the National League? Who are your wild cards, Jim?
I think in looking at the National League, this is kind of under the assumption that the Dodgers win the West. I like a lot of the other teams in the West, and I think that the Diamondbacks, honestly, I don't think they can give the Dodgers a legit run. Like, I wouldn't give them great odds of winning the West, but I think they should be, at least from an assumption perspective, pretty much locks to win one of the wild card spots.
Yep.
I'd put the Brewers in a similar discussion, but the problem is that their pitching rotation, again, makes me want to vomit. So
It's the worst in the league, right?
If we assume Jimmy Nelson doesn't get back promptly and isn't effective, yes. If Jimmy Nelson is there, they at least have an ace. But they don't have that right now. So I don't think that's an egregious thing to say. I'd say Baltimore's worse. But I think that they're bottom five, at least in the starting rotation for sure.
Yeah. Baltimore's got Bundy and they've got Gosman. And they just signed Alex Cobb.
Yeah, that helps.
Yeah, I think that's better than what the Brewers are throwing out there. The Brewers rotation is just disgusting. Yeah. And I love the offense. I think the offense is better than the Cubs offense, and that's really saying something.
Sure.
That rotation, though, I don't think you can make the playoffs with it. I've got the Cardinals as my number two wild card team, and you can call me a homer if you want. I think they made the right moves. I know it's sexy to pick the Phillies, but they've got like 80% question marks. Of course, I mean, the Phillies could win 90 games. They've
that's
got so many question marks
outcomes,
if they all work
yes.
out. Yeah, the Rockies, I think, are right in it, too. But I've got the Diamondbacks way ahead, maybe winning 95 games in a wild card, and the Cardinals.
And I can see the Giants sneaking in, too. The problem is that they play in a really tough division. They're playing a lot of games against the Diamondbacks, against the Dodgers, against the Rockies. That's going to hurt them quite a bit. So I like them a lot more this year than I did last year, but I don't know if it's enough to put them over the hump necessarily.
Same kind of thing as the Phillies. A lot of things have to go right for the Giants. And, you know, it has three times in the past decade, so it could happen again.
For sure.
By the way, I've got J.D. Martinez and Corey Seager winning the MVPs this year.
Okay.
Who would you pick?
I'm going back to Carlos Correa. I picked him last year, and he was having that breakout, and then he got hurt. So I'm a little bit sad. I think it's like me being stubborn mostly, but I'm going to go back to Carlos Correa winning it for this year. So I'll go with Carlos Correa. And then the National League, I haven't actually thought about this too much. I'll go Bryce Harper again. I always have a belief in Bryce Harper. It's a boring pick, but I think he's not quite Mike Trout, where he should always be the assumption in his league to win the MVP, but he is always going to be my odds-on favorite, personally.
I think he's the most likely. The reason I didn't pick Harper, actually, is because he's got Trey Turner and Anthony Rendon.
Sure.
And I think they're going to steal MVP votes, right? I mean, we see that every single year. The best team has like two or three guys who are an option. We saw it the year Corey Seager was going up, and the Cubs had three guys, and they just steal votes from one another. So I could see that happening with Harper. But then again, if he hits 340 with 50 homers, he's just going
to
win it.
I mean, I'd be ecstatic if Anthony Rendon were good enough this year to steal MVP votes from Bryce Harper. Like, that would make me, as a baseball fan and an Anthony Rendon fan, very happy. So if that happens, I won't be too sad.
All right, Jim, on to our bold predictions. And like I said, we're doing a countdown, so we're going to go from the least bold to the most bold. Why don't you go ahead and start us with your number five bold prediction?
Yeah, I went least bold to the extreme because I don't think this is actually that bold. But hey, I'm gonna toss it out here because I want to talk about these two guys. I am saying that Ozzie Albies will produce Ronald Acuna for this year. I don't think that's super bold because they are going pretty close to each other in drafts. And it's not bold, too, with Acuna starting the year in the minors. But, you know, it's kind of why I'd prefer to have Ozzie Albies over Ronald Acuna. If we're looking at Acuna's profile, specifically last year in the minors, he's a higher strikeout guy than Ozzie Albies is, which makes him higher variance. Yes, he can smack the ball, but that higher strikeout rate means he comes with a bit more risk than we see with Ozzie Albies. And a lot of times with lower strikeout guys, you'll see them sacrificing hard contact. But that's not the case with Albies. He makes hard contact, avoids soft contact, and he puts the ball in the air, which I love. He gets steals. He's hitting second for what I think is a decent team right in front of Freddie Freeman.
Agree.
I really love Ozzie Albies. So it's not me trying to dismiss Ronald Acuna. I just don't understand why Albies is going behind him. So I'm going to say Albies outproduces him this year.
Well, Albies is starting the season in the big leagues, too. I mean, that helps a ton. Who knows when Acuna is going to come up?
Right.
It will probably be in early May, right? But it might not be. And when he does come up, like you said, the strikeout numbers concern me. I'm lower on Acuna than pretty much every expert in the field. And I just don't think it's going to be all peaches. Like, everyone sees Cody Bellinger and they say, that's Acuna this year. Well, maybe. I mean, maybe he bats 220 and strikes out, you know, 35% of the time. He's going to hit the home runs, but if that batting average isn't there, and he's really young,
might
be some struggles. Yeah, he's 20 years old. So I don't think I'm ready to quite drink the Kool-Aid yet. I think he's a future MVP candidate for sure. I just, you know, 2018 redraft leagues, I'm not as excited. So if you had to say choose one of the two, I might go Albies.
Yeah.
I mean, I think most people would consider this bold, but I think I'm with you.
Yeah, that's why I don't think it's hard for me to call it bold because in my mind, I don't think it's bold. I prefer Albies straight up to Acuna. So that's not really a bold prediction. But with the hype that Acuna has justifiably gotten based on his spring performance, I understand why he's getting hype. He should. And if he were to come up on April 13th, which I believe is the day where he can come up and avoid service time issues, like if I were guaranteed that, sure, let's ride, man. I would be very, very excited. But I'm not guaranteed that. He's never struggled before. What if he struggles in AAA this year? I'm not guaranteed he comes up April 13th, so I'd rather just go Albies and get a guy who I think has a very, very high floor.
My number five prediction here is it's someone that I've hyped quite a bit. You're going to see that with a few of my bold predictions here. But Trey Turner, he's going to steal 90 bases this year, Jim.
That's your fifth boldest prediction? Man.
That's my fifth boldest prediction. Here, listen to this, okay? So last year, if you prorate his 98 games to a full season, he stole 46 stolen bases, right? If you prorate it to a full season, 76. He only batted 284, and this is a guy who can bat well over 300. I'm not saying he's going to return to the 342, but if he bats 300, 310, and plays the full season, takes those 76 stolen bases, 90 is a possibility. I mean, this is a guy who stole 22 bases in 1 month last year before he got hurt.
Yeah. He's a freak, man. And it's just disgusting, which is why I'm cool taking him third overall. Like, I love Trey Turner.
Yep.
I will take him. If Trout and Altuve are off the board, I will take him every time. The one thing that does kind of concern me, I guess it's two things, with Turner from a steals perspective is that he doesn't walk a whole lot. Last year, 6.7%. It was 4.3% the year before that.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have to steal a ton with Bryce Harper, Anthony Rendon, and those guys behind him. But he still did last year. Like, they were behind him last year, and he still stole a ton of bases. So I expect him to be, like, in the 55-ish range, and I think that's totally reasonable. 90 is ambitious, and I love it. But I would definitely take the under there.
Oh, I'm taking the under. Yeah. I'm just saying it's, you know, it's just a bold prediction.
Right.
So, all right, let's move on to your number four one here, Jim.
I'm going to go with Michael Conforto because I have been trying so hard to avoid getting sucked in by blurb hype because I know that Conforto is a guy who, yes, is very talented, but he's coming off of this really difficult shoulder injury. He had surgery last year, and it's a surgery that hasn't bode well for hitters in the past. We know he's not going to be there at the start of the year. But I'm going to go ahead and say he rewards us for our patience. I've given in to the Conforto hype because I just love Michael Conforto. If we look at ADP right now, he is going right by Avisiel Garcia. So I'm going to take that. I will take Conforto every time in that range, even with the concerns. So I have concerns about the injuries, especially to a shoulder, which can sap power. But he's already playing in minor league games. He has played the outfield in those games, which is also kind of a good harbinger for health. And he has been effective in the games he has played, again, against minor league competition, but it does still matter. So I do still have this worry that he can come back and be ineffective. But if your alternative is Avisiel freaking Garcia, there's really no reason to worry about the downsides with Conforto. There are downsides with Garcia, too, because his team could win 50 games. So Conforto is one of 12 hitters with a 40% hard hit rate and a 40% fly ball rate the past 3 years. He had 27 dingers last year and 440 plate appearances. He gets on base. He has an acceptable strikeout rate. I think he rewards us for our patience if we take him. I view him as a risk, but I'm willing to take that risk because of the stupid upside he possesses.
He's a risk, yeah. I mean, we were talking about Conforto just two episodes ago. I love Conforto at his price. He's a perfect stash guy. You just put him on the DL when he gets back, when he's ready to go. You know what? He mashes. The guy I would compare him to is Matt Holliday. Matt Holliday was a top 30 fantasy player when he was going. And, you know, he was more durable than Conforto. But if Conforto plays a full season, over under 36 home runs, I'm not sure which side I'd go.
I'll take 40. Give me 40 for a full season.
Yeah, 42. Yeah. Yep, me too. And he's not going to hurt your batting average. He's going to get the runs and RBIs. Conforto's a masher, man. He's a real good ball player.
And a good college pedigree, too, which I do appreciate with guys like Trey Turner. Same thing. Good college pedigree. Yeah. Conforto has that, too. So he's never really failed outside of the 1 year when he was hurt in the majors. And they were kind of jockeying around with his playing time. So I love Conforto. Again, I'm not overlooking his injury. I think that's legit. And it's the reason why he is being drafted where he is, but as long as that cost stay where it is, just give me Michael Conforto.
All right, here's my number four. And Jim, this one is more bold than the last one, so hold on to your pants here. Greg Bird is going to lead the Yankees in home runs.
I like that one.
Okay, yeah, well, good. I'm glad to hear it. You know,
I'm not saying I would expect it, but I like it.
I'm not expecting it either. Here's what it comes down to. Stanton has only played over 130 games three times in 8 years. Not banking on him getting injured, but there's a decent chance, better than that. There's a pretty good chance that Stan gets hurt, misses a chunk of games. Aaron Judge, like it or not, I'm sorry, he did have the shoulder issue. Shoulder issues come up more often than other issues. You know, if you injure your ankle, you're less likely to injure your ankle the next year. If you injure your shoulder, it's a decent chance you injure your shoulder again next year. If that happens, even if it's not a big deal, instead of him playing through it, we talked about how good the Yankees are. They're just going to rest him rather than letting him hit 210 in the second half like he did last year. Gary Sanchez, he's a catcher. I know he's been playing a ton, but you know, as he ages, as the Yankees win a lot of games, I don't think he's going to play, you know, 550 at-bats in a season like we've been seeing. Greg Bird, he could hit 40, 45 home runs. He's got top-notch exit velos. I love Greg Bird, and I'm merely saying this because there's a possibility.
And I think the thing with Bird that helps, too, is I would always be concerned about Greg Bird being platooned, you know, losing some at-bats against lefties, and that can hurt raw stats like home runs. But who are they going to use? Like, Drury's probably playing every day, so they can't use him as a platoon. You're not using Neil Walker in that situation, obviously. Brett Gardner's also a lefty, so if Aaron Hicks pops in, it might be for Gardner as opposed to a guy like Greg Bird. So
yeah.
I honestly don't know how they would platoon him on a fully regular basis, which does help out his playing time. He's batting, I think, third in a lot of the spring games. Greg Bird is right between, you know, Stanton, Judge, and Sanchez. And when you're sitting there, you're going to get a lot of good pitches to hit. So I don't think that's a super outrageous take.
You know, isn't it crazy? We're talking about the Yankees. They've got a guy who almost hit 60 homers last year. Mm-hmm. Another guy, Gary Sanchez, who's hit as many home runs per game as Aaron Judge in his career. If you can believe that, then you've got Aaron Judge, who last year hit an absolute ton of homers, and Greg Bird, who could hit 40. Between these four guys, we could be looking at 200 home runs.
Yeah, that's within the range of outcomes.
All right, Jim, who's your number three guy here?
I'm going to talk about Zach Godley because my bold prediction is that he is going to be the top fantasy pitcher from Arizona, which means I don't have him above Zach Greinke and Robbie Ray, but I think I could see him outperforming both those guys this year. I should mention Taewon Walker and Patrick Corbin. Neither
they're
of them
both
is
great.
A scrub. Yeah, they're not scrubs by any means, but I think that Godley has a chance to be the number one guy, which is kind of weird to say, because I acknowledge that he's the one who benefits least from the humidor coming to Arizona, because he is so good already at limiting hard contact and keeping the ball on the ground. So he does not benefit as much as a guy like Robbie Ray would. But if we're looking at Ray this spring, he has thrown 13 and a third innings. He has 10 walks. He had a 10.7% walk rate last year. So when I see him walking a lot of guys this spring, it gets me a little bit nervous, and we know that that can make him more high variance. There aren't a lot of guys who can be as good as Robbie Ray was last year while walking as many guys as he does, so I don't think he can duplicate what he did necessarily. I still think he's a very good pitcher, and he benefits from that humidor being there, but I'm not sure he can redo what he did last year. With Zach Greinke, he's already got this groin issue. I know that he was back a couple of days ago, but the velocity when he pitched on Wednesday was low. He's a guy who consistently has trouble with velo in the spring, so I'm not saying this is a legit thing, but it is his age 34 season. Would we be that surprised if suddenly the velocity were to fall off for Zach Greinke? So I think that opens the door for Zach Godley, who had a 26.3% strikeout rate last year and a 13.3% swinging strike rate, which means that strikeout rate could go up. Add on the disgusting ground ball rate. I think there are enough factors here for me to say it's very possible Zach Godley winds up being the best fantasy pitcher in this rotation for 2018.
Zach Godley is Brandon Webb. You remember Brandon Webb, right?
I do. He was back when I was a little bit younger, but I just remember like seeing all these insane highlights of was it his changeup?
I don't know if it was a changeup or a sinker or what. It sank for sure. I mean, he was right. The master of soft contact, and that's what Zach Godley does. I don't know if he's on the same level as Brandon Webb. I mean, Brandon Webb, listen to these stats here. 2.84 ERA. This is in the steroid era. I'm not going to go through every year, but basically, he never had an ERA above 3.6. His career ERA was 3.27. His last season, he won 22 games, then he never pitched again because he was hurt. Cy Young, number one. Cy Young, number two. Cy Young, number two. That's how he finished his career. And, you know, I'm not saying Godley's going to be a Cy Young contender or anything like that, but when you have soft contact, Brandon Webb never struck anybody out. Godley strikes more people out than him. When you got soft contact going for you, like Garrett Richards and Zach Godley, it's really going to help.
And I think the good thing with Godley, it's the same thing with Brandon Webb. He had that sinker that you were talking about that was so good for him. Godley has his curveball, and that's kind of his pitch that he can lean on and just destroy people. He has a pitch that can make him this big strikeout pitcher. I was reading up on it today. He apparently does not want to throw it more often because he's worried it'd just blow his arm out. So I understand that. He doesn't want to be Lance McCullers. So he's not going to increase the usage, I wouldn't think. But having that in his back pocket really does give him a lot of upside.
All right, Jim, my number three here is that Miguel Sano is going to hit 45 home runs and bat 280.
In like 30 games. Well, I'm not saying he'll play 30 games. I'm saying he only needs 30 games to hit 45 home runs.
I love it. I was like, oh no, is there some injury that I don't know about? Or are you just like banking on him getting suspended? Or
no, there's always injuries with Miguel Sano, but I love what he does on a baseball field.
You know, he's not striking out at all in spring training. I don't know
I'm
what's
aware, Bobby.
Happening.
Believe me, I've been keeping tabs on that old strikeout rate for Miguel Sano. I've been doing that for sure.
Yeah. So, you know, he's somebody who, as a rookie, when he came up, he batted 269, and everyone said, oh, that batting average is going to go down to 210, 240, something like that, and it did the next year. But last year, it popped back up to 264. If he cuts this strikeout down even more, he can bat 280. And, you know, the home runs haven't exactly been there, but the reason why, he's never played more than 120 games. His 162-game average is 37 home runs. He's someone with top five power in the big leagues. He just has to stay healthy, not get suspended for his off-the-field incident, and I think he could have a huge season.
Yeah, and I think the thing that we forget with Miguel Sano is that even though he's been around for a while, he missed a full year with Tommy John, too, but he's been around for a while, but he doesn't turn 25 until May 11th. So he's still a very young player. And I think I agree with you. The strikeout rate is huge. It was 35.8% last year, which is why I initially was not planning to buy into him. But if we look at what he has done this spring, it's a pretty decent sample size. I believe it's 41 plate appearances now for him. The strikeout rate is still low. And I do buy into spring stats, specifically strikeout rates, because if you get to around 50 plate appearances, there is a pretty high correlation between strikeout rates in the spring and strikeout rates during the regular season. So for Snow, I'm watching very closely. Another one of my bold predictions will center around a guy who's doing something similar, and we'll talk about him later. But it does matter for me what guys do in the spring.
All right, Jim, let's get to your final two. Who's your number two here?
I'm going to say that Lucas Giolito winds up being this year's Jose Berríos. And I think that that's a very specific comp because Berríos, if you remember back in 2016, was just awful in the major leagues. And Giolito struggled in 2016, the same year as Berríos. Last year, he was in AAA for most of the year, struggled there and did well in the big leagues. But I think this year, he could do really well if he gets a full season of run for Chicago, and they have no reason not to give him exactly that. If you look at Giolito, he doesn't really have something that I like with pitchers because I like to target pitchers who have high strikeout rates. And Giolito last year did not have that. I think he made 8 starts in the majors. His strikeout rate was below 20%, but he has a lot of pitches that can generate whiffs. His swinging strike rate was above 10% on both his fastball and his slider. It was almost 20% on his changeup. So he can get strikeouts. He just hasn't been maybe using that pitch selection the way he best should be. His overall swing and strike rate last year was 10.1%. If we look at the spring for Giolito, he has 17 strikeouts compared to 4 walks in 17 and 2/3 innings. Not a ton of strikeouts, but it's definitely enough to get your attention. And the lack of walks is good too, because that's something that bit him back in 2016. So he doesn't have the same advantages of Berríos. He doesn't have Byron Buxton shagging flies for him out in center field. It's not a great team, so I'm not banking on wins. But from a rate stat perspective, looking at his ERA, looking at his whip, looking at the strikeouts he can provide, I think he is kind of like this post-type sleeper who could go out there and give you a really solid outing in 2018.
He is a post-type sleeper. You know, I've been impacted by the bias against him because he was this former top pitching prospect. He was supposed to come up and be like the next Roger Clemens. Mm-hmm. You know, he had that kind of stuff, and it's dropped off a little bit. But you know what? He's still good.
He's
getting
still
it done in spring training. Yeah, he's 23 years old. I don't think the velo is going to kick back up to 98, 99 miles per hour like he was throwing. But you know what? This is a... he's a polished starting pitcher. He reminds me of Gerrit Cole, just this humongous righty.
Yeah.
Gerrit Cole's 6'4", 225. I think Giolito's like 6'6", 240. He's huge.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes up there and he throws strikes. He hits his spots. And I haven't been getting shares of Giolito because, frankly, I would rather have Clevinger. I'd rather have Blake Snell, Donaldson Lamet. Oh, no. I was trying to go the entire podcast without mentioning Lamet. Somebody challenged me on Twitter, and I told them I was going to do it. I blew it. Sorry. I'll try next episode, but, you know, it hasn't happened this offseason. Maybe it never will.
I'm like okay with him being dropped here. That's totally fine. You can talk about that with me whenever you want. That's fine.
But, yeah, I'd rather draft those guys than Lucas Giolito. But if you need a safe starting pitcher, I think that's what Giolito is. I think he can provide Gerrit Cole-like numbers. And Gerrit Cole, I mean, I think Gerrit Cole's being drafted way too early, but he's being drafted in the top 100.
Sure. And you mentioned Mike Clevinger. I would take Mike Clevinger over Giolito as well, because I love Mike Clevinger. But I do view him as being a bit higher risk than Giolito because of the walk rate. But
yes.
Clevinger's upside makes it worth that risk for me.
Snell's got those command issues as well. And apparently, I don't know, he was going through like relationship issues last year. And, you know, that can mess with a kid. You remember being that age, man.
Yeah, he is. He just turned 25 in December. I get it, man. I understand where he's at. Yep.
Yeah, but this guy, I mean, Blake Snell has ace stuff. He was the minor league pitcher of the year just a couple years ago. He has really turned it on this spring, and I'm not as excited about him as Mike Clevinger, but it's close, and you guys know how much I like Clevinger.
Yeah, and Snell's AAA stats last year, I know it was a small sample, but his swinging strike rate was 17.5%, which is just disgusting.
Oh,
so I like Snell a lot, too. There are a lot of high upside pitchers late, but I think that Giolito belongs in that discussion, too.
I accidentally called him Ian Snell once, and he wrote in and was like, dude, this is your job. Get it right. You know, he's right. Sorry, man.
Yeah.
Do you remember Ian Snell? I don't remember anything about him, just that he existed and was a big league pitcher.
I remember the name. I'm looking him up right now. No, he does not appear to be worth remembering all that much.
I think he pitched for Pittsburgh. Yeah.
Yeah, he pitched for Pittsburgh initially, yeah.
My number two guy, you just mentioned him. Well, I guess because I mentioned him, but it's Mike Clevinger. I think he's going to finish. I don't think this is going to happen. I think there's a better chance this will happen than any of the other ones I've said. It's going to sound more bold, but I believe in it more than the other ones. Mike Clevinger is going to be a top three Cy Young contender in the American League this year.
Whew. I dig it.
You know, Jim, I don't think people realize how good Clevinger is. I mean, I've mentioned it every show, so the people listening to my show probably know at this point. But, I mean, last year, 3.11 ERA. He's a little bit of command issues. You know, he had a 1.25 whip. He struck out 10.1 Ks per nine innings. That was better than Carlos Carrasco. The only reason that he wasn't better than Carrasco in terms of fantasy is he only pitched 121 innings. But that's a big old sample size. Pitching in front of Cleveland, he's going to get you 15 wins if he throws the full, you know, the full season, because Cleveland is that good. And I think if he pitches, you know, 190 innings, he strikes out 220 guys. It's a really good starting pitcher, especially if his ERA is back down near 3.3 again.
All right, so blind resume here. Player A, 27.3% strikeout rate and a 12.4% swinging strike rate. Player B, 28.1% strikeout rate and 11.6% swinging strike rate. They're pretty similar, right? Pretty much very similar guys. Player B, the second one was Robbie Ray in 2016. And player A was Mike Clevinger in 2017. So
wow, that's
I'm not
perfect.
Expecting Clevinger to make like this Robbie Ray-esque jump in 2018, but I'm saying that he has similar upside to what Ray had coming into last year because the strikeouts are so stupidly high. So I do worry about walks. Same thing as with Robbie Ray. He does allow some hard contact. He pitches in a hitter-friendly park, which is what was the case with Ray last year. So there are concerns. But the upside is really, really good with all those whiffs he gets.
He also has Noah Syndergaard hair, so that helps too.
That doesn't hurt. I would definitely say that, yes.
All right, Jim, on to your number one bold prediction.
All right. I mentioned spring strikeout rates before, which leads me to say that Joey Gallo will be a second round pick entering 2019. He's going to get the Aaron Judge treatment for this year because I've never really been a Joey Gallo guy, honestly, at any point. I really am averse to players with big strikeout rates who aren't named Byron Buxton, but it sounds like Gallo's trying to change that. I've read several pieces about him. I know one was by Eno Saris of The Athletic. There's another one by a more local writer whose name I can't remember at the moment, but they've all talked about how Gallo wants to put the ball in play more often. And it honestly has been working so far in spring. If we look at this year, his strikeout rate is 20.8% this spring. It was 37.7% last spring, 25.7% the year before that. And strikeout rates are always lower in the spring than they are during the regular season. But if you just compare his two spring strikeout rates last year and this year, it's almost cut in half, which is just disgusting. Obviously, I'm not expecting him to carry over the batted ball data from last year, a 46.4% hard hit rate, 52.5% fly ball rate. But even if you take those down a couple notches to account for this change in approach, he's still going to be really freaking good. He's going to potentially bat second in a great park in a pretty good lineup. I really like Joey Gallo. I think he could be this year's Aaron Judge. And if Judge is going the second round this year, I think that Gallo could be doing the same next year.
Something that separates these stars from being just, you know, big ceiling guys is how they respond and react to having problems, right? I mean, you look at what Joey Gallo's done in the minor leagues. When he was in single A as a 19-year-old, he batted .245. He really struggled. I mean, the power was there. The power was always there. The next year, he repeated single A. He batted .323. He got called up to double A. Oh, man, he struggled. He batted .232. Next year, he repeated double A. He batted .314. And then he got called up to AAA. He batted .195. Next year in AAA, he was awesome. So that's what he's been doing his entire career. He's doing it in the major leagues now. I think he adjusts. He's not going to bat .210 this year. He's going to bat .235, .240. Maybe eventually he ends up being a .260 hitter in the big leagues. I know that puts me like way out in front of everybody else on Joey Gallo. But you know what? He also has 55 home run potential. This guy could be an American League MVP someday. I'm not saying it starts this year, but it has to start at some point. Maybe it will be this year.
Yeah, and he had 41 home runs last year and 532 plate appearances. So 50 homers is ambitious, but it's not totally unrealistic. So he's also entering his age 24 season. I know he's been around for a while. He's been in the big leagues at times since 2015. But he's still only 24 years old. 24-year-olds make adjustments. And we've seen Gallo talking about it. We've seen it in action in the spring. So I'm buying Gallo aggressively in dynasty leagues. I'm picking him in roto leagues, even though I know he will probably, he's still going to be a downside in batting average. I know that, but I can accept that because I think the upsides here are so sick. And again, it doesn't hurt that he stole 7 bases last year too.
Yeah, yeah, you're right about that. If you had to rank the guys in order most likely to hit 50 home runs, you've got Stanton, you've got Judge, Bellinger, Harper, JD Martinez. Where would you pencil Gallo into that conversation?
I would put him on the lower end just because he has fewer balls in play than the other guys. Assuming that the strikeout rate doesn't come down drastically, I'd probably put Martinez one-ish. I love JD Martinez. Wow. I think Stanton's 2. Judge is probably 3. Harper 4 because his park is not as good. But then you're getting into an area where Gallo's definitely there. And I think they all could do it. Like, every single one of those guys could do it this year. I still keep Gallo on the lower end because of the fewer potential home runs that he has with the higher strikeout rate, but I would never rule it out.
You know, I would put Matt Olson in that conversation, too.
Yeah.
And that's another guy that I mention far too often. But, you know, Matt Olson was by far the best home run hitter per at bat last year in the major leagues. And that's incredible to say with, you know, Stanton having hit so many homers, Judge, Bellinger in few at-bats, Gallo, as you mentioned. Olson was the best of them all. He's doing it again in spring training. He's just a monster, man. Matt Olson could definitely hit 50 home runs. If I had to bet, I would put him at 42. Mm-hmm. But there's like a handful of guys I would say that about.
You know what's a good omen for him, Bobby? His birthday is opening day. So you get the birthday narrative from Matt
Olson.
That
is good.
From day one. So what better way to start than with a 3-homer day for your birthday?
I like it. Yeah, 3 home runs. I don't know if that's enough. I'm thinking 5.
It's never too early to walk down narrative streets. So let's just embrace it and say that he'll hit 5. Sure, I'm good with that.
All right, my number one bold prediction is that Miguel Cabrera will lead the American League in hitting and hit 30 home runs this year.
Totally cool with that one. Love me some Miguel Cabrera.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, you look at his batted ball stats, Jim. And first of all, he was the single most unlucky hitter in all of baseball last year. If you compare his expected WOBA compared to his real WOBA, that's just an overall encompassing measure of a player's batted ball success, is their expected WOBA compared to their actual success. He was extremely unlucky. But listen to this, okay? Last year, he had the best line drive percentage of his career, 27.3%. His career average, and we're talking about like a first ballot surefire Hall of Famer, his career average 22.4, so 5% lower. He also had one of his highest hard hit percentages of his career at 42.5. It was better than either the past 2 years, too. Miguel Cabrera just struggled, man. He struggled from luck. He had 3 injuries that he dealt with, and I know he's old, so those injuries could happen again, but strained groin, collarbone issue, back injuries throughout the season. I mean, this is a guy who just had a rough season. His career is not over. He could return to bat 330 again. He batted 344, 330, 348, 313, 338, 316, 249. Because of injuries, he's going to bounce back. I don't know if the power will be there, but there's a chance it will be.
Yeah, I think the power definitely could be there, honestly. Like, I don't want to write that off. I think I was talking about performance in the spring with guys like Miguel Sano and Joey Gallo. I didn't really care about performance in the spring for Miguel Cabrera because he's been around so long. I just wanted to see him healthy. It's the same thing with Matt Carpenter.
Yeah, just in the lineup.
Yeah, I wanted to see Matt Carpenter in the lineup. I wanted to see Miguel Cabrera in the lineup. For Carpenter, I wanted to see him play not first base, which he has been doing recently, which makes me very excited. But Miguel Cabrera, seeing him in the lineup, makes me feel a lot better about that back issue because I did have worries coming into spring training about that. But now that he is playing, I don't really care about the stats. I just wanted to be out there. He has been out there. I like Miguel Cabrera a lot, so you'll never talk me out of him. I'm taking him pretty much wherever I can get him. Like we talked about UN assessments as being a guy I wind up with a lot, but the guys I wasn't targeting, I'm getting Miguel Cabrera a lot because I am targeting him.
Yeah, I'm getting Miguel Cabrera a lot because I'm targeting him too, but the thing is, like, I don't have to reach for him because nobody is reaching for Miguel Cabrera. I'm just sitting back and waiting, and every single time I'm like, oh, man, I can't believe he dropped another round. I'll take him.
You have to, like, restrain yourself because you know he'll be there later. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah. I think I've got, like, 80% shares of Miguel Cabrera. That's more than I have of Donaldson LeMet.
Yeah.
So take that for what it's worth.
And it's justified, too. I'm cool with that.
Yeah. All right, Jim. Well, that's all for today's show. I loved your bold predictions. As always, it's awesome having you on. Thanks for joining the show.
Yeah, sorry I couldn't quite go as bold as 90 steals for Trey Turner. I'm not quite there yet, Bobby, but maybe...
When it happens, I will remind you of this, that you thought it was way too bold, because it's going to happen.
I didn't think it was way too bold. I just loved it. I thought it was spicy. Spicy is the word that I would use. I expect a tweet when it happens, and I will be excited to receive it. So thank you, Bobby.
I'll probably tweet you every time he steals, so get ready to have like 1,000 tweets.
You know what? I need those interaction numbers on Twitter up, Bobby, so I welcome it. I welcome this.
All right. Thanks, Jim. Take care, man.
Thank you, Bobby. Appreciate it.
Thanks again to our friends at FanDuel for hosting the special opening day contest. Remember, there's $5,000 up for grabs, and first place wins $1,000 plus a lifetime Fantasy Pro subscription. You can play by going to fantasypros.com/contest. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your baseball.